You are listening to Learn Japanese Pod, and this is the Fun Friday edition where we talk to amazing people doing cool stuff in Japan. And this episode is no exception because we are speaking to the amazing Catherine Gronauer. Hey, Catherine, how's it going?
Hey, Alex. It's really great to be here with you.
It has been ages since we spoke last time. I think it was 2020 when we spoke last.
I know. I can't believe how much time has flown. I mean, we've gone through the entire pandemic, but at the same time, like the pandemic, it's one of those weird things where you feel like it was so long ago, but it was also not too long ago. So it's, you know, trying to make sense of your timeline is really challenging nowadays.
I think the pandemic feels, it does feel like it was ages ago, but recent. I think that's called trauma.
Yes.
When we spoke last, again, this was back in 2020, we were talking about your work as a coach, and you were doing cross-cultural training, helping foreigners to transition into their life in Tokyo. You were talking about your work as a health and wellness coach, talking about veganism, Japanese diets, how to lose weight, which I still haven't done. And also, you are the author of Confessions of a Yo-Yo Dieter. Get your copy today at all good bookstores and Amazon.com. And also, the great thing is, it's great to reconnect with you. And it's great to see that you're keeping on keeping on, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so I think last time we spoke, that's right. I mean, right now I'm entering the 10th year of my business.
Fantastic.
So when we talk about 2020, I was really kind of in the thick of doing Thrive Tokyo. So right now I have two websites, actually. So one of them is Thrive Tokyo. So that's what we talked about last time.
Right, right.
I was helping people transition to living and working in Japan, doing cross-cultural education training and also orientation programs. Mm. And that's still something that I am doing currently. But I have a separate website now, which is just myname.com, CatherineGronauer.com. And so that's just a place where I'm housing a little bit more of the coaching work I'm doing, more with leaders who are stepping into new roles. I'm doing public speaking. And Thrive Tokyo now is more about a community. So it's about a community and events and workshops for people who are living here in Tokyo, who are really interested in personal development and also professional connections. So there's been an evolution.
That's fantastic. I'm just so happy to see you going from strength to strength and seeing you being an entrepreneur in Tokyo. I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are going to be interested not only in specifically what you do, but also your life as an entrepreneur, how to make a success of life in Japan. And if you're listening, we'll put the links on the website, but the first website that you mentioned was Thrive Tokyo. This is the one we originally talked about 5 years ago, Catherine, years ago, my gosh, which is just that thrivetokyo.com. And your other website is Catherine Gronauer. So that's Catherine with a K, K-A-T-H-E-R-Y-N, Catherine Gronauer, GRONAUER.com. By the way, you've got a very spiffing looking website here. This is very, very, very sleek, very professional. Wow. I don't know who your web designer is, but they did an amazing job.
Thank you. Actually, I've done most of it myself.
What?
Yeah. I had somebody just adjust some of the images and the text to align a bit, but for the most part, I've created the site by myself.
Oh, no, you are too talented. You're a multi-talented person. That's incredible. Wow. So let's talk about post-pandemic, the P word we shall never mention again on this podcast. What is the main kind of core? What's the main focus of your current coaching and business now?
Yeah, that's actually a really great question, because I feel like having come out of the pandemic, I'm really combining a lot of the things that I've used in the past. I feel like it's all coming together.
Awesome. Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was some things, you know, the pandemic, it created an obstacle where, you know, a lot of foreigners were not coming into the country. Mm. So on one hand, the things I was doing with Thrive Tokyo was kind of put on hold.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I was getting more inquiries from corporations about doing wellness oriented programs, and I was working more and more with people who are residents in senior level roles. So for myself, I evolved to gaining another certification in coaching for executive coaching.
Wow, very cool.
And so right now it's kind of all coming together, and more people are coming into the country now. I've continued to do the cross-cultural education side of things, but also getting more into leadership-oriented coaching. And one new thing that I've just started doing is called the Cento Mindset. So this is based on a TEDx talk that I did a couple of years ago on my experience of growing up in a family of public bathhouse owners, which are called Cento in Japan.
So you mentioned the other day to me when we were chatting that you come from a family of Cento owners. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. We don't want to bury the lead on this. This is super interesting. So, first of all, what exactly is a Cento? And then tell us about your family, like tell us about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So, a Cento is basically a public bathhouse. It's a little different from onsen, which are hot springs. So hot springs are basically natural hot spring areas where you would go to take a bath and unwind and, you know, maybe even go on a retreat somewhere outside of the city. Whereas Centos were established in urban environments. So it's basically people who don't really have time to go out to hot springs. You still need a place to bathe. So, you know, throughout Tokyo, there's been a very strong bathing culture where you would take a bath just at your neighborhood Cento.
The thing I love about Centos is, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I think many of the owners tend to be older people because maybe back in the day, long time ago, maybe some very small housing either didn't have their own baths or very limited resources. So you would go to the public bathhouse to bathe. And the thing I love about Centos is many of them have this kind of Showa era look, which is kind of 70s, 80s. And it's very retro in a really cool way. And so you go into the Cento area and then you've got a little box for your shoes that you put in. And maybe there's this like chunky wooden key that you keep so you can get your shoes on the way out. You go in, you pay the person to use the Cento, and then you go in and it divides into male and female.
Yes.
Change and you go into the Cento itself and I'll let you I think you can explain it a lot better than I can, but I just love the retro feel. So if you want a really maybe a different experience that maybe most tourists don't have, if you're considering doing sightseeing in Japan, definitely go see a Cento. I highly recommend it. So tell me more about your family and owning Centos. That's so fascinating.
Yeah, so I actually never really thought that this was such an unusual thing until I started bringing it up to people. Basically, people were asking me, hey, Catherine, what's it like to start a business? What's it like to be an entrepreneur? What's it like to write a book or do public speaking? And my first thought is always, it's like going to a Cento. And they're like, well, what does that even mean? And I said, well, you know, any new thing that you do, you kind of have that moment of feeling naked, like all eyes are on you. And you also feel like you're putting yourself into hot water because you're doing something you haven't really tried before. You need to adapt to that experience. And so I felt like there was just so many overlap with the Cento. So anyway, going back to my family experience. So my great-great-grandfather, he's originally from the Noto region, which is the region that got affected by recent earthquakes that they've had.
In Ishikawa Prefecture,
Prefecture. Yeah, so he left that area to come to Tokyo and start a bathhouse. He had 8 children. of which one of them was my grandfather. So he was the firstborn.
Wow.
My grandfather was a military guy. He really wanted to become a lawyer, but because he was the firstborn, he was obligated to overtake the Cento business.
Right. If you didn't know that, traditionally the oldest son will take on the family business. And that happens maybe less so today, but it still happens, right?
Yeah, it still happens even today, where I think people feel an obligation to take over their family business even today. But I think back in his generation, it was even more so, has to take over the business. So he wound up doing it all. He became a lawyer and he overtook the business and he employed all of his siblings, basically. And we actually, at one point, our family business had 5 Centos, which was unheard of. Having one was a lot. Having more than one was crazy. Having 5 was just nuts.
That's like a Cento conglomerate. That's amazing. Exactly. And were these Centos up in Ishikawa, or was this Tokyo?
This was all in the Tokyo region, specifically in Itabashi.
Oh, Itabashi. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I grew up visiting Itabashi every year. You know, I'm half Japanese, half American. Oh, so okay. Every summer I would come to Japan to visit my grandfather. And at that time, my aunts and uncles would be running the bathhouse that we had there. So I would go to the Cento every single day, just as a part of my normal routine. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't just go to the Cento every day. Like, I lived the life of a bathhouse family member, you know. So bathhouses, most of them don't really open until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
And they close around 1 a.m. So basically, the lifestyle was such that, you know, my grandfather would be waking up at 5 a.m. to take the dog for a walk. And then my aunt and uncle would be waking up around 11 a.m. and then having lunch, which is essentially their breakfast, and then doing all the things that would need to be getting done for the bathhouse. My uncle would be hauling large pieces of wood to be feeding the fire to start heating the temperatures of the water. Wow. My aunt would be doing the cleaning, and then they would then around 4 o'clock it would open, and we'd have at least one person within the family had to be manning the counter to check people in. So it's kind of like we had like this revolving door. Sure. Like we were never always together in the house. There would always be somebody over at the Cento, somebody and other people at home. And they would just take turns on shifts at the Cento, and it wouldn't close until 1. So by the time my aunts and uncle were finishing up their day and taking their showers and, you know, having their dinner at 2 a.m., they wouldn't go to sleep until 3 a.m. So 3 to 5 a.m. was the only time the entire house was completely quiet.
So I think I see myself as a future Cento owner, because those hours from 4 p.m. to 3 a.m., that's how my brain works. Weird, nerdy, technical questions here. You mentioned heating the water. You use wood, or what? How did you heat the water?
Yeah. So behind the Cento, what people don't see, you know, behind the scenes, is like there's this huge furnace where the temperature needs to be adjusted there, and the fire constantly needs to be burning to heat all of the baths. And so we had kind of right next to our house was this big garage, and it would always be full of wood from like construction sites and stuff.
Really?
That wasn't being used. They would haul all these wood scraps there and just store it in there. And my uncle would basically every day have to take out these large pieces of wood and just go feed it into the fire. But that's essentially what's heating all the things. And I remember being really scared to go back there because, first of all, it was really hot. Like the second you open the door, it's like this blast of heat from the furnace. But also there's all these winding pipes under the floorboards. And so you're kind of really have to be careful about where you're stepping. To make sure you don't accidentally touch one of those.
So essentially what you were saying is you were Cento Chihiro no Kamikakushi, right? That you were, your life was a Ghibli movie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's so fascinating. Did you ever, were you ever on the counter taking people's money, or what kind of jobs did they give you?
Yeah, I did. I tried to do that, but I mean, trying to like calculate, you know, my primary language was English, but sure. I grew up learning Japanese, just hearing it through sure. family members. Sure. So I kind of wasn't really at a point where I could be like calculating change and helping people. But it could be things like just giving people towels. It could be things like going into the locker areas to just sweep the floors, as an example. Or basically just help out with any other stuff that our family needed. Like we were even just doing our own laundry in some of the washing machine areas that are kind of at the front lobby area of a cento. And so I would be transporting stuff back and forth just to help out. Yeah.
Was there much of a community around the cento? Did you get to know the local people?
Yes, absolutely. So as an example, we have a dry cleaner just one block from where our house is, and that was also privately owned. And so we would basically take our dry cleaning there, and then the woman who worked there at the dry cleaner, she would come to the cento later that day. So yeah, there's a lot of community connection and just seeing the same regulars in that space.
The hours are 4 p.m. onwards, right? So generally speaking, people wouldn't go to the cento in the morning. And I wonder, correct me if I'm wrong. So let's say something about Japanese culture, that Japanese culture, Japanese people tend to have the bath in the evening.
Yeah.
More than the morning, right? That's a Japanese cultural thing, right?
Yeah. And you see different profiles of people throughout the course of the day. So the people going there at 4 p.m. are usually like very, very old people who, you know, they're dining really early. They're going to bed early. Mm. So probably like the oldest people you'd see on the spectrum would be there around between 4 and 5.
Right.
Then you would also see people like housewives who are trying to get their bath in before they have to go home and cook dinner for their family members coming back. Then the next round of people are maybe a little bit younger generation, people who just get off of work, who are going to the cento after they've done an exercise class or something, and then go home for a late dinner. Wow. And then you bring that all the way up until like midnight, where you have the salarymen who have just managed to make their last train home, take a cento before they actually go back into their house. So yeah, there's different profiles of people throughout the course of the evening.
So Catherine, I see a new business opportunity opening up here as a cento consultant. It's amazing. You have such an intricate, intimate knowledge of how the business works, the kind of people who go there. Absolutely fascinating. Are those centers that your family run, can people visit them today?
Well, unfortunately, our last cento closed about a decade ago when my grandfather passed away. Mm-hmm. So cento in general is a fading business. Yeah. It reached a peak probably right a little bit after World War II.
Yeah.
But after World War II, when Tokyo was being reconstructed, people started having baths and showers in their own homes. So the necessity to go to a cento outside of their homes was not really there anymore. People started to just go to cento more for pleasure than for necessity. Right. So I think there's still a very strong bath culture in Japan. It's just people are choosing to go to places like large, what they call super centos, so places that have a bathhouse, but also you know, a restaurant and a gym and a spa, or you know, where you can get a massage, like an all-in-one very large facility, or they're taking the time to go out of the city to go to onsen, hot spring. So I think the culture of the cento itself is starting to fade. But I have been seeing some new centos pop up, which has been really exciting.
Yeah.
There's actually a new one that just opened in Harajuku, which is made to look like a retro cento, but it's all modern and very fresh. And so I get excited going there because it looks like the one that I grew up going to, but it's just very, you know, fresh and new. And that one in particular actually opens as early as 7 a.m. So they have they're very good with their business model of trying to make sure, you know, early morning people go running and they want to go to a cento before they go to work. And they've just been catering to a wide variety of people. They have some English pamphlets and stuff that are available. So I see tourists there sometimes too, who are taking a bath. Yeah, so I think that Cento is just kind of being redefined, I guess, moving forward.
This is just so fascinating. I love this. And I just love, again, your intimate knowledge of Centos. Yeah, for me, I very occasionally go to a Cento as something fun and different and interesting to do. And I love going to, you know, the really retro ones. I used to live near Hatagaya, and there's one in Hatagaya. Yeah. For some reason, it was like popular with celebrities and all these pictures of like really famous actors from the 90s who went there. And it's just like really funky, retro looking. It's one of the coolest places you could ever go to. So yeah, again, I would highly recommend, definitely go and visit a Cento. Maybe we'll put a little explainer for etiquette, you know. We don't need to go into that, because there are a million videos on how to take a bath in Japan, but definitely visit a Cento. I highly recommend that. Now, Catherine, going back to your work as a coach and like a consultant, you have the Cento mindset. So I'd love to kind of talk about, who do you work with? How do you help people? What kind of outcomes are you working towards? Tell me about the Cento mindset. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so the Cento mindset, basically the Cento is a physical representation of transformation. So the state that you're in when you enter is different from the state you're in when you exit the Cento. And in order to experience transformation, you have to do two really incredible things. You have to open yourself up to being naked in a public space.
Okay.
And you also have to put yourself into really hot water with just pure faith that you're going to adapt at some point. And the thing is, people do this because they want to feel good. So that's the whole point. So what's the whole point of, you know, vulnerability, the whole point of putting yourself in hot water? It's because you want to feel good at the end of the day. And so that Cento experience, in the course of whatever 40 minutes, an hour of time that you would take in that space, is a very clear representation of transformation and how you move through each of those stages. So what's going through your head when you're undressing? What's going through your head when you're in the space and you're washing yourself? What's going through your head when you're trying to get yourself to adapt to this really hot water? That can give you a lot of insight to how you experience change and transformation and transition in other areas of your life. So, you know, when you start a new job, maybe you're facing imposter syndrome about, you know, if you're doing the right thing and you're in this new space. How do you feel about uncertainty, you know, and being in new spaces and not really knowing how, not really having a lot of control over things? What are some slight adjustments you want to make in terms of your temperature? Do you feel like the tasks you're doing are too hot for you? Is it too cold? To challenge yourself more, you know, how can you kind of calibrate things a little bit better? Those are the things that I want to invite people to explore by having that sensory experience of going through a Cento. So we can basically do the Cento and then debrief about your experience, or vice versa, talk about Centos, and then you can go into the Cento afterwards once you've had some clarity around some personal things that are happening in your life. So,
Wow, this is deep stuff. I love it. The very first thing you said was like really funny. It's like, why do we make ourselves vulnerable? And then we put ourselves in initially something that is very, very uncomfortable and possibly even painful.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's like, oh, I'm glad I did that.
Exactly.
What kind of people do you generally work with? And what's a very common stumbling block that people have?
Sure. I think so far since running these workshops, the people I've been encountering are people who are in some state of transition themselves.
Right.
So, you know, it could be people who are thinking of leaving their job, but they're not sure what's next, or maybe they've been laid off and they're thinking about what's next, or maybe they're, again, new to living and working in Japan and they're curious about, you know, what experience are going to come, you know, in the future. So I've also had people who are transitioning into parenthood. So maybe they're, one person is a pregnant person who came and another person who has a one-year-old child. So just like, it gives you like an opportunity to kind of reflect on where you're at and just again, trying to recalibrate. I actually have three core principles for the sectile mindset. So I think that might give a little bit more context.
Yes.
But so the three topics that are very essential for from a coaching standpoint are one is drop the towel.
You mean I take off all my clothes? Yep.
Yes.
All your clothes. I'm completely naked. Yes. And then you're given a small towel, which you're supposed to use for scrubbing and washing, right? And I always kind of place it in a strategic location.
Yes.
When I walk in. And so, and because even today, I'm a little bit shy.
Yes. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up the towel thing, because that towel specifically, like, it's meant at the end of your time to kind of wipe away any water droplets you have so that you're not packing them into the locker area when you come out.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of people have said that that little tiny towel is like their protection.
Yeah, right.
You're like, clinging on to this little tiny towel as your little thing you can hide behind despite being completely naked. Yeah. But yeah, so the first topic is, or principle is drop the towel. So that could mean many different things depending on how you want to interpret it. But as an example, when I ask people, what does being naked in a new experience mean for you, that act of undressing, I was really surprised to hear people use things like, they were saying things like liberation or camaraderie, like I feel connected to other people, or I feel a sense of rawness. So you're exposed. It's not, but none of these words are negative. It's not like, oh, I feel vulnerable. I feel self-conscious. I feel uncomfortable. It's more about the act of being open as being a symbol of liberation. You're liberating yourself. So, so the concept of dropping the towel is more like, where do you need to be maybe more honest with yourself about your current situation? Or maybe where do you need to be more open with other people to kind of create alignment in your current situation? That's really what the concept of dropping the towel is. You're not sharing a secret. You're just opening up what's already there. You're shining light on what is already true, essentially.
I love it. I love that. That's really cool. Yes. So dropping the towel, dropping your nonsense, being honest with yourself, being honest with other people. Love it. Fantastic. Good stuff. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's principle number one.
Sure.
Principle number two is testing the waters. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a funnier thing to call it, like drop the towel.
right.
But yeah, testing the waters. So basically, this is a question around like, how do you usually approach new challenges? Are you the kind of person who likes to go straight in? Like you just like to like walk right into the water as fast as you can and just get it over with? Or are you the kind of person who likes to kind of do the toe dip?
Yeah, right.
You want to be like, okay, is this the right bath? Maybe I should try another one. Am I ready for this? Are you the kind of person who likes to really, really focus on focus on the experience of you adapting, or do you like to take your mind off of it? Like you try to think about something completely different. Do you focus on your breathing? Do you use breathing to help you? Is there something else you use to help you through that experience? So testing the waters could mean, again, something different depending on what your personal preference is. But this topic is really around resilience and grace. So are you giving yourself enough time to adapt to the water? Are you choosing the water that's the right temperature for yourself? Because let's say you're starting a new experience, you're really heart-centered, you've dropped the towel, you're like, I'm ready for this experience, but you're putting yourself in the wrong temperature.
Yeah.
Then, you know, maybe you start questioning why you're there in the first place, you know, maybe, you know, but it's all about just adjusting the temperature. Maybe you just need to try something that's a little bit right for yourself. Maybe you need to give yourself a little bit more time.
Yeah.
Those are the questions you can ask yourself around this relationship with the tasks that you're doing, essentially.
That's so cool. Yeah. Do you feel that sometimes some of this is to do with pacing? You know, you have a new, it could be a new job or transitioning to something new, a new project, a new hobby, a new goal, and people maybe they're going into it too quickly. They're kind of burning themselves out. It's either, I don't know, the temperature is too hot or you're going at it too quickly. And sometimes you just need to go, listen, this is a marathon, not a sprint. You can go a bit slower. You don't have to necessarily have that no pain, no gain kind of mindset, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, like, you can't force transformation you can't force yourself to adapt any quicker than you can. So
I'd agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. This is definitely connected to things like burnout. I would say burnout is a combination of having not dropped the towel, but also putting yourself in hot water. So you're not really being honest with there's something that's not being honest, or maybe you're not setting boundaries or not communicating. You know, something's not, a lack of transparency is happening.
Your core values aren't, you're not expressing your true values, and they're misaligned with this new endeavor that you're engaging in, right?
Yeah. So any type of misalignment, I think if you feel misaligned somewhere in your life, just asking yourself those two questions around, like, where do I need to be more transparent? And am I in the right temperature? I think those are the two things that would really help you gain more alignment, intrinsic motivation, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. So drop the towel, which is a big thing, I think. You know, being honest with yourself and being honest with other people is not easy. Testing the waters.
Yep.
You know, how intense is this experience? Kind of how intense is this experience for you? Is it kind of aligned with who you are? What is the third principle?
The third principle is the one degree. The one degree.
The one degree. Yeah.
So this is interesting. When you experience a bath and you come out and you feel so great, you're like, oh, you know, it was so relaxing. It was worth the experience. I've gone from feeling really tense to feeling really relaxed. In order to feel that great, you only need to increase your body temperature by 1 degree Celsius.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So what that means is, in order to feel great, you actually don't need to get into the hottest bath.
Right.
You just need to get into a warm or hot bath for a long time to bring your body temperature up.
Right, right.
Yeah. So the how this concept works in the real world is, let's say you're facing a challenge. Mm. All you have to do is ask yourself, what would 1 degree of change look like for me? If I could just make 1 degree of change that would feel really, really good, what could that be? So this is not about taking a goal that feels like a mountain to climb and trying to make incremental improvement. I'm not really saying that you need to have small goals. What I am saying is that transformation can happen in as little as 1 degree.
I think a lot of people tend to think in extremes if they have a challenge. Something isn't working in their life, maybe at work or personal. Okay, I need to make a big change now. And actually, in most cases, you don't need to make a big change. You don't necessarily have to quit your job. You don't necessarily have to make this massive change at home. It's just this little shift, maybe even in mindset, or just a small thing.
I guess
like a boat, right? You're going along at a certain direction, and a 1 degree change downwind or whatever is a big change in the end. Yeah.
Exactly. So it could be maybe you do have your goal, like your eye on a prize, and it's just a matter of trying to make the next step feel a little bit simpler or doable. But it could also be like, if you're navigating uncertainty, you really don't know if the end goal that you think you want is what you really want until you achieve it. So another way to look at that is, okay, 1 degree shift, like, what do I just want to experience that would feel really good? Okay, maybe I'll just test this. Maybe I'll test that. So it does help you kind of stay unstuck, basically. You can move into a place of action. And just recognize that the end goal is just to feel good.
I love that. So drop the towel, test the water, and then the 1 degree.
1 degree.
Love it. People, listeners, please use these principles. So on your website, you had, are you drowning in your to-do list, feeling underappreciated and questioning if you're on the right path? Like, that hit me, especially about drowning in my to-do lists or my lists of to-do lists. This is something that I'm terrible at. I'm terrible at organizing myself. I feel completely overwhelmed. So, Catherine, as I have you here, I'd like to get your ideas and suggestions on how do I deal with to-do lists and overwhelm. And I write everything out, and then I look at the list and just despair hits me. What should we do?
Oh, I totally hear you on that. And I think without going into coaching you specifically, maybe I can just have some high-level things to think about.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think usually the challenge people have when they're facing overwhelm is more that they're thinking about external measures of success.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that if you have a lot on your plate and you're really excited about it, or you feel like you have some internal alignment about why you're doing it, then you can have a really long list of stuff, but feel really excited about all the tasks.
Right.
They're all set up to something bigger.
Yeah.
So I would maybe ask yourself like what the motivation is behind each of the tasks. Like, do you feel like you're trying to prove yourself? Are you trying to hit an external, deadline marker that has been set because you think it needs to be, but maybe it doesn't really need to be? Those would be the questions that I would ask yourself about.
Right.
And then maybe just see if you can reconnect to the why. So if I was to connect this to the Cento mindset, maybe starting with the drop the towel thing. So, where do you need to be maybe more open with yourself about your current tasks list? It sounds like the temperature, if we're doing the test of the waters, is way too hot.
That makes all the sense in the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say maybe like some of the clues that you're looking for with your to-do list are around there. And once you have that kind of transparency, that understanding of what the temperature is for you, then you can start thinking, okay, well, what's 1 degree? What's like one area I just want to kind of explore with my to-do list that would feel really good? It could be something like, what do I need to let go of on my to-do list?
Yeah. Do I really need this on my to-do list? Like, why did I put this on there? Was it because I'm trying to impress someone, or I'm trying to make myself feel busy for, not good reasons? Love it. Yeah. I'm going to have to listen to this podcast again, because this is so, so deep, and there's so much information here. I'm going to have to unpack this in my head. This is all fantastic. Send me the invoice in the post. I'll get it paid next week. This is all fantastic stuff. So again, I'll put links to where people can find you online. People might like to know a little bit about you and your life in Tokyo, because I think that might be interesting for our dear listeners. So just a quick fire round, if it's okay. And just to kind of get to know you and maybe give some interesting information about Tokyo in Japan. So your life in Tokyo, let's talk about that really quickly. What do you do for fun in your free time in Tokyo? How do you relax in the big sushi?
Yes. So right now I have a 1.5-year-old. So I don't really have a lot of
time. You don't have any time to chill, right?
Yeah. But I will say that a lot of the places that I was kind of helping families connect to, the people who are, transitioning to living, working here in Japan, I've now been able to firsthand experience
That's
it.
That's great.
With my daughter. So yeah, we've just been enjoying going to different kind of playrooms and stuff that where she can play. And I've been looking more into some little concerts and stuff that are more, focused on children. So it's been like I'm kind of re-experiencing or re-exploring Tokyo, but from a different perspective, just by having her.
So you're not going clubbing in Roppongi anymore, but but for those with young kids, toddlers in Tokyo, if on a Saturday you want to spend time with your daughter or your family, what's an easy place in Tokyo to take them?
Yeah, sure. So I think at this particular age, so 1.5, one good place that we've enjoyed going to is called Eric Carle. So it's like the author of those books. Gosh, it's right off the top of my tongue. The Hungry Caterpillar. Yeah, so there's actually a playroom in Futakotamagawa, which is not too far from Shibuya. And it's this really big playroom area. They have different zones, basically, which are great for different ages. And they also have a couple of live activities that happen as well. So you're able to go there, I think, for like 2-hour sessions. So they have like 2-hour time slots that you can book. Yeah, it's just great to go over to that area to do some playtime with her. And then afterwards, we can go have lunch in that area too. Maybe come back through Shibuya and do some shopping and then go home. So it's a really great family day.
If you didn't know, Futakotamagawa is a really nice suburb south of Shibuya. It's just next to the Tamagawa, just the southern bit of Tokyo. And Futakotamagawa, I guess, it's very suburban, lots of families, and you see lots of families with their kids there. Are there any kid-friendly restaurants that you would recommend in Tokyo?
I am still figuring that one out.
Yeah, right. So,
So are there any kid-friendly ones? Yes. But are they like great for adults?
Nah.
You know, Are there places that kind of allow you to bring your stroller in? Yes. So we've been kind of testing that a little bit. I think The only thing that we really haven't been able to do is just anything with a counter seating. So if there's if it's a tiny shop that only has a counter, we really can't really, you know, go in with our baby. But pretty much everything else we've been able to make work. Even if we can't fit a stroller in, we'll just, you know, bring her in and sit her down somewhere inside. So it seems like we've been able to make most places work for the most part.
Well, good for you. We should do another podcast about, you know, kids in Tokyo, because I think that's it sounds like it's challenging. Tokyo doesn't seem like the easiest city to have kids. Not that it's impossible, but it's Tokyo is a city where you come here to work.
It's kind of right.
Just another topic, just because this is Learn Japanese Pod, I want to talk a little bit really quickly about speaking Japanese. First question. And this is about your daughter. Do you think you'll be bringing her up in a bilingual environment? I mean, obviously you are obviously a native English speaker, but you live in Japan. So will she grow up bilingual?
Yeah, so I'm half Japanese and my husband's also half Japanese.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
So we speak both languages. But right now our plan is to have her in daycare where she speaks Japanese or she's learning Japanese. She doesn't speak yet, but she's hearing Japanese throughout the course of the day. Right. And then we speak English with her at home. Mm. And right now I typically pick her up usually by 4 p.m. So it's not like she's spending the entire day all in Japanese. So we are trying to strike a balance from a language perspective there.
Sure.
And then of course on the weekends we're speaking English with her primarily. But, you know, even like TV shows, like sometimes she's watching Japanese TV shows like Anpanman, Doraemon, that type of thing. And other times we'll watch some shows on Netflix together, which are all in English. So we have been trying to raise her as bilingual as possible.
Your own Japanese, I mean, I assume you just picked it up growing up with your family. And then did you ever study Japanese formally?
Yes, I did. That was actually pretty challenging because I had learned a lot of just casual day-to-day Japanese that you would speak with your family. And then when I went to school, since I already had some understanding of the language, I was placed into a level 3 Japanese class, which actually was the first level 1 and level 2 is usually when you start with keigo. So like you start with like honorifics and like formal Japanese. Sure. And then by the time you get to like level 3, that's when you start learning more casual Japanese. So for me, it was a very backwards learning in that everybody else already had formal Japanese, but I didn't. And I understood stuff in the class, but I didn't have reading and writing experience. So I found for me, the easiest way to pick up more language, get more into formal stuff, learn the honorifics, all that stuff was actually to work. So I got a part-time job at a cafe.
Good for you.
Yeah, but I really had to push myself. I had to go into my cento of learning Japanese.
There wasn't even a towel to drop. You dove headfirst into the hottest cento.
Exactly. Fully clothed, went right into the hot water.
Wow, that must have been a wild experience. I mean, even though, you know, obviously you'd visited Japan and you have Japanese family, that must have been pretty intense.
It was pretty intense. I mean, you can't be speaking casual language with like customers coming into the cafe. So it was definitely a boot camp and trying to learn, more formal Japanese. And even my first job out of college, I was told that I would be doing more international stuff and using English. But of course, you know, when you join a Japanese company, they kind of place you wherever they need hands and not necessarily exactly what the job description was. And so, I actually started in a Japanese department and I was primarily talking to people on the phone and writing emails. And I was thinking the first few weeks I was there, I was like, I'm going to get fired. I learned very quickly there. And I'm really glad I had that experience because it's definitely helped me in other areas of my own personal business. So,
last couple of questions and we shall wrap this up, Catherine. So here's one to stump you because I like to bully my guests. If someone were to write a book about your life and leadership journey here in Tokyo, what would the title be?
Oh my goodness. You're right. I'm stumped on this. The first word that pops into my head, since I'm half Japanese, you know, we have the word hafu to describe. It's a very controversial term. You know, some people think that we should use other terms, but anyway, I stick to hafu. But I feel like something about being half Japanese and half American would definitely be there because most of the work that I've done has been something related to Japan, bringing Japanese cultural into, you know, bridging cultural gaps of that nature or helping people through transition. So going from one place to another. So I think that word would definitely be in it somewhere.
There you go. Bridging the gap. I love that.
Bridging the gap.
Not only between cultures, but where you are now and where you want to be perhaps. I think because obviously what you know, in your work, you're helping people bridge the gap from where they want to be.
From one to another.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think the title of my book about life in Japan would be like, how not to live in Japan.
What not to do.
what not to do. Live by reverse examples. Yeah, right. Here's a curveball for you, Catherine. What's the one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self when you first started living in Japan?
Yeah, well, I think back then, and I think for a lot of people, a lot of like foreign residents, I did not realize how long I would be here for.
Yeah, right. So, yep. Ditto.
So I feel like I think I would give myself the advice that I usually give people who are new here, which is to expand your network. So just it wasn't until I had been here for maybe 6 years or so where I was kind of in the process of doing my own business. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to be living, like I should actually put roots here. I hadn't really thought of putting roots here. And that's when I started exploring, you know, organizations, whether it's like the chambers or it's women's organizations and I'm like, wait, these communities have been there this whole time. And I had no idea that they were here. And, you know, the communities are places that outlive or outlast the individuals that might be in there. So it's really great to join. Yeah, just be part of communities as much as you can.
That's such good advice because one of the complaints or one of the worries that long-term residents have here is like people come and go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. I think that's really good advice. But if you join a community, whatever the community is, you know, focused around, the community outlasts the individuals who come and go, but you're always, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. That's a good place to end this podcast on. Join communities. Well, Catherine, thank you so much. Please promise me next time we talk, it won't be another 5 years because we need to...
on stuff a lot sooner.
Yeah. No, oh my gosh, I've got so many podcast ideas. Talking about kids in Tokyo and all the other stuff we talked about. So again, thank you so much for coming today. It was very enlightening for me. I learned a lot. I love it. And dear listener, please check out Catherine's websites. And again, I will put links on our website at learnjapanesepod.com. So we'll have all the information there. And you can see Catherine's beautiful, beautiful website. But again, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun. And I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a pinky promise. Let's do that. And I'll speak to you soon. Dear listener, thank you so much for listening. We will be back with more Fun Fridays very soon. Nihongo ganbatte kudasai. I'll see you very soon. Matta ne. Thank you.